Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Before the French Revolution in the 1790s, the people of France were going hungry while the aristocracy, well, did nothing. Well, someone went to the Queen, Marie Antoinette, and she was told that the people were starving because they had no bread. And the Queen said, let them eat cake. Today, the American people are starving for the truth. And the government media complex says, let them eat cheesecake. Terrorists are brought from Gitmo to the Midwest of the United States. Obama sends 30,000 troops to Afghanistan. Our soldiers are being maimed and killed. Our treasury is being drained. Our borders are being overrun by illegal aliens. But instead of focusing on that, the news media, under Rupert Murdoch in particular, serves up some cheesecake. He hires Elliot Spitzer's prostitute to write a sex column. He reports on Tiger Woods' latest mistress. Anything but the real news, anything but the real truth. But who is letting the enemy into the country? Who is imprisoning the men who try to keep them out? Who is depleting the lifeblood of our nation to line the pockets of his henchmen? That's something the government media complex doesn't want to talk about. So let the people continue to be starved for the truth. Deny them the serving of justice that they deserve, and let them eat cheesecake. The media doesn't give a darn about whether the United States remains a strong nation or even a nation at all. The media doesn't care if our soldiers are shot and killed. The media doesn't give a rat's behind about whether the people who are in charge of this nation drain the treasury and give billions of dollars to their friends and cronies. All the media cares about is airing fluff, frivolity, and filth, the three F's. Anything that will boost their ratings, anything that will titillate, anything that will cause this nation to slide farther and farther into a distracted debauchery. Fluff, frivolity, and filth. The people are starving for the truth, and the government media complex says, let them eat cheesecake.
Savage.
And of course, here we are today with a list of the White House party for TV and radio types. Wait until you hear who's on it and who's not on it. Well, let's start with the group that you would least expect to be invited to the White House. That would be Fox News. Now, you'd say that's shocking. Obama invited people from Fox News. This is very telling. Not everyone from Fox News was invited, but Bill O'Reilly was there. As you well know, I've called him the leprechaun for years. Greta Van Susteren was there. I've called her Scarface for years. Major Garrett and Bret Baier were there. Notably lacking were some of the others from Fox News who have been particularly unkind to Barack Hussein Obama. As you would expect, CNN sent the department store dummy, Wolf Blitzer, and some others you never heard of. From CBS, the usual group of sycophants, Bob Schieffer, Chip Reed, whatever that is. Names you never heard of. And from more snotty nonsense by chicks, there was Andrea Mitchell, Rachel Maddow, that's the strange creature from MSNBC, Contessa Brewer, perhaps one of the dumbest people in the history of the media, and others. Now, you may say, well, how come you weren't invited? How come Rush wasn't invited? I'll let that question go unanswered. Would I have gone? Well, let's put it to you this way. I wasn't invited. And as Groucho Marx said, I would never attend the country club that invited me. Climate deal brings legal objections, say some. In fact, Obama's mission to save the Earth from Al Gore, I mean global warming, actually violates the U.S. Constitution. This is going to be a real slam-bang event when our Marxist president tries to sign away our sovereignty in Copenhagen. Who will actually stand up to him and take it to the U.S. Supreme Court is the question. I know many of you really don't care about that. I know you'd rather talk about Gitmo and transferring some of the worst terrorists on Earth to the United States, to Illinois. And you may say, well, who is behind it and why do they want to do it? It's about money. It's always been about money. Senator Dick Turbin Durbin, a man who called our troops, particularly our Marines, in Iraq at the time, Nazis and fascists. Senator Dick Durbin, who I named Turbin Durbin, was behind moving these murderers to Illinois. And why did he do it? Because of the money. They're taking a prison that really didn't need to be built, a prison that never should have been built, a prison that was built strictly for the graft and corruption of the building of the prison that is now sitting empty. And they said, wow, what a great idea. Let's transfer people here for the jobs. So listen to clip six to this one.
President Obama made the right choice for our country. His home state of Illinois stands behind the president. We see this as a great opportunity to not only serve our country, but to provide meaningful jobs for a lot of people desperate for work.
That's a statement that's worth taking apart. A great opportunity to not only serve the country? I thought liberals were against prisons. I thought liberals were against prison guards. I thought liberals were against detaining Gitmo terrorists at all. Is there anyone listening to this show from Illinois who disagrees with the good senator from Illinois, Senator Turbin Durbin? If you disagree, give me a ring at 1-800-449-8255. Let us listen to clip four now.
We believe this is in service to our country to make certain that Guantanamo is phased out and the threat that it currently poses to us around the world is eliminated. But secondly, this is a great opportunity. Our state unemployment numbers, the most recent ones, were 11%. And in some parts of the state,
I can't listen to this man. I can't listen to Turbin Durbin one more second. In my day, the most he would have owned would be a butcher store. And at that, he probably would have gone bankrupt because he wouldn't have known how to juggle the books. In my estimation, Turbin Durbin would have been the kind of man who sold Chuck while selling it at the price of sirloin. WOR, New York calls. Michael, go ahead. You're up in the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I hate to say this, but Obama's socialized or nationalized health care is a necessary evil like death. If we didn't have death, the world would be overpopulated. Now, why do I say it's a necessary evil is last year, and the year before that, General Motors spent more money on their workers' health care and the health care of their families.
Right. I know all about it. And that's because health care is the greatest scam in the history of the American people.
With companies like...
You're not listening. You're just sending. You're not receiving. Yes, we need meaningful health care reform. Let's start with closing our emergency rooms to illegal aliens. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, I agree with you. But
well, that costs about $500 billion a year. How about closing off lawsuits, capping them at $250,000? Why have we not heard one word about capping lawsuits for fake medical claims? Why is that not part of the health care reform? Are you that foolish to believe you're getting health care reform? All you have here is Nancy Pelosi stealing the health insurance industry for her cronies. That's all this is.
Yeah, but the thing is, other countries give health care to their workers, and our companies cannot compete with them.
Tell me which other countries have such wonderful health care.
Well, Japan.
And how many illegal aliens per capita are in Japan sucking the healthcare system dry? And by the way, is there such a thing as tort lawsuits in Japan?
No.
No. The lawyers are not permitted to become the rapists that they become in America, my friends. The lawyers in Japan are not permitted to make up fake complaints and rape hospitals and doctors blind. There are almost no illegal aliens in Japan, and they don't get free medical care. So that's the end of your argument. Thanks for the call. We don't need health care reform of the type you're getting. What we need is tort reform, and we need a highway patrolman in every emergency room in America. That's what we need right now. That's exactly what we need right now. Don't give me this nonsense about every other industrialized nation. They don't have the flood of illegal aliens that we have sucking our health care system dry. That's number one. They don't have leeches and vultures and vermin with law degrees suing hospitals and doctors at will for any amount of money. So don't give me this rubbish about every other nation on earth. They don't have the same kind of legal system that we have, which is nothing but criminality with parchment. I'll be right back.
Savage. We'll be right back.
there have been some who have been critics of this. You've heard them. But we went to the source. We went to the people in the area who will be directly affected by this decision. The support for this Thompson prison is overwhelming, and it's bipartisan. At every level, as Governor Quinn has said, people understand that we can safely and securely hold fewer than 100 Guantanamo detainees and 1,500 or 1,600 prisoners in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. We can do this. We've done it before, and this will be the safest prison in America.
Now, this is Durbin. Listen to the liar. He just said he went to the source, the people in the area who will be affected by this decision, meaning the people who are going to get jobs in the jail. But he didn't go to the people of the state of Illinois and say, do you want 100 of the world's worst terrorists in your backyard? How do you people have a senator like this? Well, you know, I don't blame you. We have two outlandish hags in the United States Senate in California, neither of which represent the people of the state of California, representing only either foreign interests or special interests. That would be Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer. They represent nothing that is decent about California, in my opinion. And look who you have in New York State. Are you telling me that Upchuck Schumer and Hillary Clinton really represent the people of the state of New York? Or do they represent a very small band of the far left and special interests? Are you telling me they represent the hardworking people of the state of New York? Well, go to Illinois. You're telling me Durbin represents the people of the state of Illinois? Look around America. Look around America. You'll find the same pattern. You have so-called representatives not representative of the people that they supposedly represent. How did this happen? How did the nation become so hijacked? How did we get hijacked? How did it become so that a crazy man like Durbin can bring 100 of the world's worst terrorists to Illinois, and he has the audacity to say the people of the state are behind him? I'm not from Illinois, but I certainly wouldn't want 100 of the world's worst terrorists in my backyard. Would you? Would you want them in your backyard? Let's try the people in the state of Illinois, okay? Chicago. Agnes, what do you think? Is he right or wrong? You want him in your backyard?
No, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I think Durbin have lost his mind. He's a total idiot. Obama, him, and this whole Senate and this whole government combined, this whole bunch of stupid people. They don't know how to run anything. And as far as people are...
Well, you see, but they're not stupid, Agnes. You're wrong about that. These are very, very cunning people. Everything they do is calculated for how much money it will bring into their district and into their contributors. It's basically a gang running America. And whatever this gang can do to run money through their system is what they do. This is not for the good of the American people. This certainly wouldn't be in the interest of the people of Illinois. This is going to benefit a few people who are in the prison business, people who supply meals to the prison, people who supply security to the prison, prison guards, and things like that. Who do you think is going to benefit from this?
And ain't nobody else is going to benefit but Durbin. And as far as them coming to Illinois, I think this is a big mistake. And I heard also saying that after they get out and they serve their time, they're going to become a legal U.S. citizen. Well, I tell you what, Michael, I'm a permanent resident, and I can't even become a U.S. citizen. I think it's unfair for people that go into the whole process, whole bunch of...
It is unfair. I know a few people. I know one gentleman from Fiji who's waited 4 years to get a legal green card. And you know what I said to him? Why don't you just shave off your beard? I mean, put on a mustache and swim across the river from Mexico and tell them your name is Mexican. They'll make you an instant citizen.
Yeah, but that's not what's going to happen. Those people that are in those, they're going to be transferred or they are already there. They will become U.S. citizen. And I think it's unfair, and these people are going to have jobs.
Well, why does Durbin think he can get away with this? Why is he not thrown out of office? Why is somebody not running against this bum? That's the real question. Thanks for the call. That's all. That's the whole story. Now, this just came out. Pelosi, Bela Lugosi's granddaughter, Nancy Pelosi, said that public support for health care reform is over. She just said it. She said that it's not happening. She said health care reform will not pass this year. That's what she said, no matter what they do. And I don't know if this is true or not, but she said just tonight that she doesn't think that they're going to get it through today. She said, maybe it'll pass, maybe it won't pass. She said, we will have a bill, but it won't be the kind of bill that we want. And she said they're going to modify it once they get it through, whatever that means. We all know that it's all special interests. We know that abortion and public option are two big contentious issues. We understand that none of the American people that you know are going to benefit from this. It's all going to be illegal aliens and lawyers. They're the number one winners in this. But let's go back to this big story. How do you feel about taking prisoners out of Guantanamo and moving them to Illinois? How do you feel about that? Why would you bring war criminals to the United States of America? Why were they not tried? And if they were found guilty, given the appropriate punishment, including execution, if that is what they were found to deserve, and if they were found innocent, repatriated to the nation that they came from, why would you bring them to the United States of America if they are innocent? The answer is they're not innocent. The answer is they're guilty. So if they're guilty, why were they not given a military tribunal in Guantanamo and given the punishment that meets and fits the crime? That's the real question. And it's a question that has a pretty obvious answer. There's an awful lot of money in housing prisoners. Think of the lawyers who are going to make money on this. Think of the doctors who are going to make money on this. Think of the medical care, the food supply, the linen supply. Think of all the suppliers in Illinois who are going to benefit from this, who just love this right now. It has nothing to do with right or wrong. It has only, in my opinion, to do with the bottom line. I don't think the people of Illinois would be behind this. I don't know. We can move on. We can move on, you know, to something else if you want. I have callers now from around the country. So don't think I'm just trying to dig for callers. I always get a lot of callers. But this is a very hot issue right now because something's wrong with this picture. That a senator would be a rogue senator like this and make a rogue move of this kind and bring in rogues from Guantanamo to Illinois and say with a straight face that the people of Illinois want these 100 terrorists in their backyard. Something is wrong with Turban Durbin.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation with the Wednesday edition. Everyone's shopping. No one's paying attention. Look, there's some good news out there tonight. Pelosi has admitted that the health care bill has been derailed. It will not be railroaded through in December. And so Obama gets a black eye. The fact of the matter is they're putting a nice face on a disaster for Obama. He said he could railroad this through and it would have been the second 1,000-page bill railroaded through in his first year. It ain't happening. It's over. Now they're saying they'll get it done before the State of the Union speech January 20th. What a State of the Union. If there was a thermometer, the thermometer would burst the State of the Union with these bums breaking the economy the way they're doing it. They're breaking the Constitution every day. So the fact of the matter is they lost. The fact of the matter is the founding fathers in their great wisdom set it up so that a dictatorship, it'd be very hard for a dictatorship to arise in America. And Obama, as you well know, is a baby dictator, a little baby dictator who would like to become a giant dictator, but it ain't happening. Unfortunately for him, it is not happening, not yet. The fact of the matter is he cannot railroad this so-called health care reform bill through no matter how he tries. You see, the Senate is filibustering the bill. One of the senators is reading all of the pages and every amendment on the floor of the Senate, and the way the system was set up, it was set up to slow things down and let people think before voting or before being bought off. That's more accurate. And as a result, even Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi, has said, not now. It won't happen in December. And as you know, Obama wanted this as a Christmas present. The young president on training wheels wanted to show that, yes, he could. Well, it turns out, no, he can't. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the a website. Joe in San Francisco, my hometown. What's on your mind today, Joe?
Thank you. I'm originally from the Quad Cities. So this is about the prison in Illinois. It's a scary thing to think about. You know, it's going to attract Islamic extremists like bees to honey out there. And I have family that still live out there, and it's just a scary thought to have.
Wait, that's interesting. In other words, by bringing 100 of the world's worst terrorists to northern Illinois, their families, that's right. and their friends and their imams will have to travel there, won't they?
Absolutely. It's scary to think about.
My, I didn't even think of that. The prison will have to build a mosque for them, won't they? Well, think of the money in that. Who's going to get the contract for that, my friend? You're not thinking clearly, Joe. It's all about money for Durbin.
I'm sure the government's going to be paying top dollar for that property.
Well, just think of the housing community that will evolve around that prison. Think of the wonderful training camp that could be built around it behind barbed wire. Joe, have you been to my website, michaelsavage.com, and seen the actual video put out by the Christian Action Network about the entire constellation of radical Muslim training camps in the United States of America and what they're teaching women to do in some of these camps to kill? Have you seen these videos?
I go to your website frequently, but I have not seen that.
It's actually frightening. You've got to look at some of these videos to see what's going on, Joe. Thanks for the call. Very nice. A government of the people, by the people, and for the sheeple. Yep. A government of the sheeple, by the sheeple, and for the people. Or for the sheeple. Let's move on. I'm sick of this. We know what's going on here. It's all about money. And we know that Durbin doesn't represent the people of the state of Illinois. We know that. Not in my opinion. New York, WOR, Tammy, your opinion counts. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I am so upset right now. I work in the prison system in the state of New York. I'm around people. I have to look over my shoulder constantly in what I'm doing because these people are, all they're thinking about is a lawsuit. I can't believe that they're bringing war criminals to the United States. They're going to be treated like citizens, whether they're citizens or not. They're going to get the same rights as the citizens.
And well, right now in Guantanamo, despite the lies of the rats on the left, despite the lies of the rats in the media, despite the lies of the rats in the ACLU, the prisoners at Guantanamo were given better treatment than the U.S. Marines are being given in barracks in Afghanistan.
Absolutely. It's sickening.
It's sickening. The enemies of America, are frankly taking the side of the enemy. They're playing for the opposition. We understand that. The enemy within. I wrote about it 4 years ago. A lot of good it did me. I got banned in a Western nation. I believe that the countries that we are living in, the West, have been taken over by Saudi oil money, and I believe that they put most of our major politicians where they are, and I think they control them.
Yes. I live in the state of New York. They're going to have a trial down in the city.
You have a wonderful man named Barack Hussein Obama. We tried to warn the American people that we did not trust his loyalty to America nor the Constitution, and I believe we were correct. I believe that if you look back upon the first year of Barack Hussein Obama, I believe that all of our suspicions about him have been confirmed. I believe that the man is not loyal to the U.S. Constitution, and I can prove it. I can go down the list and show you that this man's loyalties are not to the U.S. Constitution. Tammy, you know, I know that it's hard to accept because people don't want to accept sometimes the truth. It's too hard for them to believe. But I believe that all of our suspicions and fears about Obama have been more than lived up to. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Reno, Nevada. Jason, what's your opinion? Go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Mr. Savage.
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm super nervous. You're not the only angry man in America, sir. I'm just answering your questions. And yes, we are listening, and yes, a lot of people are not very happy with the situation. And why even bother talking about it at this point is, I guess, my
opinion. I believe that Obama is disloyal to the United States of America and disloyal to the U.S. Constitution. That's my premise. Now, would you like me to support that premise? Because I'd be very happy to do so. Let us say we are having a debate, and my premise is that Barack Hussein Obama is not loyal to the United States of America nor its principles as reflected in the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Let us begin with a president who has appointed czars directly responsible only to him. He has appointed czars, C-Z-A-R-S, who have not been confirmed by anyone in the Senate, who have not gone through an FBI clearance check. That's number one. Would you believe that there would be czars in America? Would you believe that there would be plans to subsidize newspapers? That is to create national newspapers that are responsible to their beholder, meaning the people who give them money? That would be Izvestia or Pravda in the ex-Soviet Union. Would you believe that we would have medical panels in the United States of America deciding who could and could not get medical treatments or medical equipment? Would you ever believe that that would happen? Would you say that that's loyal to the U.S. Constitution, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Would you believe that there is a federal agency in the United States of America that gives school children written material to enlist their singing and their support for the President of the United States? Have you ever heard of that happening in this country? I haven't. I believe that President Obama is not loyal to the United States of America nor to the U.S. Constitution, and I will continue my argument as follows. Obama floated the idea some time ago of creating a national police force, something that this country has not had ever since its creation. We have local police, we have military, we have FBI, we have a National Guard. Why would Obama even have suggested that he needs a police force, a national police force, that reports only to him? Would you say that that is loyal to the U.S. Constitution? Well, there was another leader who needed a police force that was loyal only to him, even though the country had a military and the country had local police. That leader was named Adolf Hitler, and he wanted a police force that was 100% loyal only to him, and he created the SS, which was Hitler's private national police force. Why would Obama even suggest that he needs a national police force? Play the soundbite if you think I'm making this up.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well funded.
Did you? I mean, you don't understand what's going on, most of you. You haven't any idea that we have a baby dictator here who would like to become an adult dictator, and how far he can go is up to how much resistance he meets, both in the Senate and in the streets. The fact of the matter is, he would like to go all the way if he could. He has said he is, quote, out to change the United States of America. So he appoints czars. He pushes through bills that are unconstitutional. He had a preacher by the name of he had a good friend named Bill Ayers who talked with bombs that he planted. Now, we try to warn you about Jeremiah Wright. We try to warn you about Bill Ayers, but many of you called us extremists. You thought that the man who planted bombs was not an extremist, but you felt those of us who pointed out what they did say and what they did do, that we were the extremists. Why? Because your mind is made of putty, nutty putty. Let's look at the rest of the reasons I say that Obama is not loyal to the Constitution nor patriotic. I'll continue my premise. He appointed czars. Some of them have praised enemy dictators who have killed millions of people like Mao Zedong. He has appointed people into the education department who are promoting sexual practices that are contrary to sane sexual practices, contrary to medical sanity, and contrary to the values of most Americans, whether they be Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, or Buddhist. Why is he doing that? Why would he put such a czar into the school system? And so you say, well, Obama may have missed investigating them. Why would you assume that Obama didn't know who these people were? Why would you assume he actually disagrees with them? He could fire them, after all, if he didn't agree with them. And so as I say to you, I believe President Obama is not patriotic. I believe President Obama does not believe in the U.S. Constitution. I believe the president has contempt for American values and traditions. I believe that the president will go all the way to becoming an adult dictator rather than the baby dictator that he is right now, unless you, the people, speak out and you, the people, act out through tea parties and through voting at this time. You must understand the danger we are in. Now, that is my premise, that Barack Hussein Obama has in fact lived up to the fears that we had about him at the beginning of this year and going back even into the campaign. We are now, of course, in December of the first year of this man's dictatorship, his mini dictatorship. And as I say, everything I have pointed out confirms my worst fears and suspicions about this man. I'll be right back. as the year comes to a conclusion here at the end of December, we're evaluating Barack Hussein Obama, the revolutionary president of the United States of America. There were many, many warning signs during the campaign. Jeremiah Wright, he certainly didn't leave the church, and we warned you about that. He hung out with people such as Bill Ayers, who said it with bombs. He hung around with activist goons from around America in groups such as ACORN. And, of course, we try to warn you about that. The fact of the matter is that he's hung around his entire life with people who actually reject American values, who don't like America and Americans in general, and who especially detest successful Americans, considering them all criminals. As far as I am concerned, the man is not patriotic. The man does not represent the constitutional values of the United States of America, nor does he reflect on the family values of the United States of America. That's my analysis after the first year of the baby dictator Barack Hussein Obama. Lee in Sacramento, you disagree? Go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, the reason I called, thank you for having me, was I enjoy your show, but I think you don't exactly understand liberals completely. By that, you have made a comment from time to time that you believe liberals are anti-war and anti-prison and such as that, but great many of us are not anti-war at all.
No, I don't believe liberals are anti-war. In fact, most of the wars of this century were started by Democrat liberals, so you're wrong about that.
Okay. In addition, what is seldom said by the progressives, and I think what really is a major difference between liberals and Republicans, or I should say conservatives, but it's hard to say, but I think it's religion. For the most part, liberals they can't say they're atheists because you can't get elected, for the most part, in a national election as an atheist. But that kind of explains also why liberals excuse Barack Obama for sitting in Reverend Wright's church for so long, because in reality, we're not listening to him anyways. We don't really believe it, but you have to go to church because, again, if you say don't believe in God, you're just not going to get elected. But I think when you really take our...
So you think Obama faked it in a church to begin with?
Yeah, actually, I really think pretty much most liberals do that, the ones who are politicians.
I agree with you on that. Bill Clinton had a fake Bible created for him by his friends in Hollywood with an overly large cross on the cover, so that would make sense. How do you feel about Obama having appointed czars who they were never selected, appointed, or they went through any background checks? You believe America needs czars?
No, I agree with a great many of things you state. I'm troubled by the whole czar situation as well.
How I'm sure you're troubled by Obama saying that he wants a national civilian police force. Wouldn't that scare you as a liberal?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. He said something about that a long time ago, but I don't see any action or any direction.
Well, not now. He's still a baby dictator. That's something he could never get away with. First, he's got to get a Castro-like healthcare system in place, a step at a time. That's how progressives move. First, you get in the control of the banks, then you get control of the insurance companies, then you get control of Wall Street, and then you get control of the healthcare system, and then eventually you start taking control of the police. See, it's step by step. It's not done overnight.
Well, I do see your point, and I do see your concern. I'm just not concerned. I just don't believe it's going to happen. I don't think there's going to be...
Well, I believe that it won't happen because I think there's enough resistance to Obama now. His ratings have plummeted since people have gotten to know him. The more they know about him, the less they like him. They feel... I believe that there's greater voter remorse today than in any time within the first year of a president's tenure in the history of this country. I believe this is the greatest scam in the history of the United States of America, to have taken this unknown green president, this green senator from Nowheresville, a man who nobody really knew, and make him president with money from George Soros, from unions, from Saudi Arabia, you name the country, they contributed to this, and they put their man in the White House. And I believe that the American people were duped, and they know it. And that's why I think that his so-called Marxist progressive campaign must go much more slowly than it would have gone otherwise. Lee, let me ask you something, Lee. Have you read Banned in Britain yet?
No, sir.
Do you think I should be banned from a Western nation for speaking my mind? I don't believe you would accept that as a liberal, would you?
Of course not. I think that was that. I get it. I agreement with you. I think that's a joke.
Well, let me send you a copy for Christmas because at least you're a guy that wants to reason and argue with me rather than screaming and yelling. That's the way to go. So let me send you a free copy of Banned in Britain. And for those of you who have not yet gotten your copy, I just got notice this afternoon that my fulfillment company has stepped up the type of shipping where if you order in the next day or two, you can still have the books delivered in time for Christmas. So that's something to think about. I highly recommend the book. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, Houston, Texas. JC, welcome to the program. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Because of NAFTA and GATT, that is America's new economy, prisons and military warfare. That's it. We have nothing else to do.
So you say that actually it's good to have more prisons in America.
I disagree with it. But when I go on the Internet and I listen to the people of Illinois take an opinion on this question, they want the prison there, even the people that live two or three miles away from them.
Well, because they're going to get money from it. It just shows you Americans have no values except the bottom line, especially in northern Illinois.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. If you've just joined us, I have put forth a premise. The premise is that all of the fears and suspicions we had about this unknown man from Illinois named Senator Obama have been fulfilled. I believe that he is a baby dictator who would like to be a daddy dictator. And I believe, and I've said this, that there is great voter remorse in the United States of America. In fact, I made the second premise that there is probably, and I've not done a study, but I'm saying I suspect that there is greater voter remorse today after 1 year of this man's tenure than in the history of the U.S. presidency. Now, you're not going to read that, for example, on CNN. You're not going to even read it on Fox News. You won't read it on the New York Times site, the L.A. Times site, the USA Today site, CNN site. You won't read it in any of the government media complex outlets. But you will hear it on Michael Savage because this show is an independent show. I am not syndicated by a, let us say, mainstream syndicator. I'm very lucky. I have an independent syndicator who does not really answer to Maimon in that regard. And so really what you get from me is the unadulterated opinion of a single man, one man's opinion. The New Yorker ran an article about me, and I was really thrilled the way it worked out, the profile. I mean, it's not 100%, you know, making me into an angel, believe me. It was a mixed bag, but overall it was pretty good. And the reason I'm referring to the New Yorker profile, which is a part of this year's good stuff that happened to me, is that the writer of the New Yorker called me a party of one. He said I'm a heretic amongst heretics, and that I believe that's true. I'm actually proud of that. I think I represent the best of American individualism. I think I'm genuinely an American independent. And I hope that you resonate with some of my viewpoints. But again, I want to present this premise that Obama, in fact, has fulfilled our worst nightmares about him. And I think the only thing that has constrained him from having done even worse, meaning gone farther down the road of a dictatorship, is the few people in the media who have stood up to him, and the Tea Parties, and the few people in the other movements, for example, that have pointed out who he is. I also would like to hear from those of you who voted for the man who have voter remorse. Has anyone out there voted for Obama and has voter remorse today? 1-800-449-8255. Let's take the callers. Las Vegas, Chris, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Chris here in Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Fan of the show. And yes, I do have voter remorse for Obama. I don't feel that he's represented the type of ideas that I've shared with other Democrats. And a lot of what you've said in the previous caller brought up a good point, too, about the differences between conservatives and liberals may, in fact, have something to do with religion.
But that's an interesting point. But, Chris, did you vote for Obama?
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay, so here's the question. Has he gone too far to the left or not far enough to the left for you?
In my opinion, he's gone too far to the left.
Right. Now, that's interesting because the communists, i.e. progressives, which is a code word for communist or Marxist today, the communist progressives say he hasn't gone far enough.
Well, those Trotskyites that are in Washington that feel that are plain.
Now, you're using a very big word. How do you know what a Trotskyite is? I've actually met some. They're the most dangerous people on the planet, and Obama is surrounded by them. What is a Trotskyite?
Well, from what I read, according to Bolshevikism and the types of communist socialist ideas, was that Trotsky wanted to break away from the Western type of thinking and create a unification or a communism to offset independent thinking minds and he got as far as...
People don't understand that when we say socialist, we're talking about numerous varieties of said movement. In other words, when you say the man is a socialist, I love how the media says that's absurd. It's not absurd. He is a socialist. Every European who has an education above the fourth grade knows that Obama is a socialist. But in Europe, they're more sophisticated with regard to politics. So they have parties called social democrats, socialists, communists. So they understand such terms. The American people are so stupid that all they think is Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican. They're like roosters and chickens in a barnyard. They have no political understanding of what we have here. We have a naked Marxist in the White House who has tried to push the country not only to the left, but into the communist camp. And the only people who have stopped him, frankly, are the people who have pointed out what he's done. And frankly, he can thank himself for it, for having appointed such radicals in such high positions. They damned him more than the right wing did in this country. A woman gets up and says that one of her role models is Mao Zedong. How in the world could he have appointed her as a czar?
I don't know. That's insane to me. Just like the czar of the Department of Education. I've read some things on the internet and other material where he's...
Oh, the man in charge of safe schools who has given classes on some very unsafe practices to young children? Unsafe practices that I wouldn't even mention on this show because it's a decent family show. Things that you cannot believe that they're so dirty and unsanitary. This man is in the white, basically in the cabinet?
Insane.
Why doesn't Obama fire him if he doesn't agree with his policies? Chris, you live in Las Vegas, which is really a great city. We're talking about Anita Dunn, who, by the way, was forced to step down. She was in the Education Department, if I'm not incorrect here. Let's listen to Anita Dunn.
And then the third lesson and tip actually come from two of my favorite political philosophers, Mao Zedong and Mother Teresa, not often coupled with each other. But the two people that I turn to most to basically deliver a simple point, which is you're going to make choices. You're going to challenge. You're going to say, why not? You're going to figure out how to do things that have never been done before. But here's the deal. These are your choices. They are no one else's.
All right, turn her off. Okay, this low-life rat, Anita Dunn, was thrown out as White House communications director after this soundbite was discovered. So she's brainwashing children into accepting Mao Zedong, who killed 60 million Chinese during his reign of terror. So Obama appoints this woman. Why? It's not that Obama disagrees with her. Let me tell you something. I knew left-wing professors back in the 60s. I won't mention them, but I can remember to this day their name. They loved Mao Zedong. I know people in San Francisco who call themselves Americans who used to give out the Little Red Book. In fact, they republished his Little Red Book. The Little Red Book was used as a predicate to the killing of people with eyeglasses, for example. Anybody who was a member of the middle class was considered bourgeoisie, and they were killed. They were killed in China by the Reds, the Red Brigades. They were killed in Cambodia under Pol Pot by the Khmer Rouge. Millions of doctors, lawyers, teachers, accountants, in other words, the entire middle class was wiped out by Maoists in Cambodia under Pol Pot. And let me tell you something about Pol Pot that many of you don't understand who he is. You know, you never heard, maybe you heard of him. Pol Pot was a dictator who ran Cambodia. Remember the mountain of skulls that was uncovered in Cambodia? The death camps, they were worked to death. Mainly they were worked to death by children, 14, 13, 14-year-old kids who had been brainwashed by this Marxist dictator. They were given red bandanas. They were called the Khmer Rouge, meaning the red bandanas. And they were given guns, AK-47s with bayonets. And they were told to round up people who were against the revolution. That would be anybody with eyeglasses for these dumb, loser, low-life peasants, these children who knew nothing. And they were murderers like the gangs in America, the gangs that would kill for nothing. They were given a gun. They were given an insignia. And this gang of red bandanas was sent around Cambodia to round up the middle class, teachers, doctors, lawyers, accountants, businessmen, businesswomen, you name it. They were rounded up, and they were worked to death, or they were killed outright. And, of course, that was well known at the time. It was a horrible time in history. And you say, well, what does that have to do with Obama? Let me explain why you should be worried, very worried indeed. Pol Pot was a professor. Pol Pot was a mild-mannered college professor who went to Paris from Cambodia to study Marxism. He became radicalized in Paris at one of the universities. He came back a devout Marxist, and he tried to institute Marxist values, so to speak, in his country of Cambodia. And so he created the Khmer Rouge, and then he left behind 3 to 4 million dead people, the Mountain of Skulls. So what am I saying here? What I'm saying is ideas can be very, very powerful. Ideas can be very, very powerful indeed. Ideas can create cures. Ideas can create miracles on earth. And ideas can also create horrors that are unimaginable to the average American. We can't even imagine such a thing happening here. We would say it can happen here. I would argue it can happen here. And I would argue that only vigilance and resistance to this baby dictator and his band of terrorists can prevent this from occurring here. I'll repeat it. Only vigilance and resistance to this baby dictator, Barack Hussein Obama, can prevent the Khmer Rouge from appearing in this country. That's my opinion. I'll be right back. +1 800-449-8255 or visit me online at michaelsavage.com. I'd like to take some callers right now from around America. Let's begin in Indiana. Michelle, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I love this topic. I'm glad you're not letting this go, the big picture of how did this happen. And the voter remorse question is excellent. I enjoyed the last few callers.
Yes. I mean, we've heard of buyer's remorse from people who buy cars, for example, and wish they didn't 2 or 3 months later. We know of that phrase, but no one has used this phrase voter remorse other than I, which I use this year. And I still have the premise that the voter remorse factor is higher after 1 year with this man, Barack Hussein Obama, than ever with a president in American history.
And I think if people were honest, it was very soon, but they didn't want to, you know, it would be embarrassing to admit to yourself and others. But what I don't understand is what did they think they were getting? It was so obvious. I mean, you were telling us from when Bush was still in.
That's right. I was telling the people all you had to do was look at the Reverend Wright. He sat for 20 years listening to hate America rhetoric, and that didn't tell you anything. His friends were Bill Ayers. That didn't tell you anything. He studied under Saul Alinsky. That didn't tell you anything. Everything we try to warn you about came to be true. Now, the only reason he hasn't been able to push forward the daddy dictator agenda is because he's been constrained by organizations and talk radio, some at Fox News, not all of them by any means, and certainly some websites that have been relentless in pointing out what this man has been doing.
Right. He is the dictator top. That's what I call him.
I agree. I believe he's a baby dictator who will only be stopped from becoming a daddy dictator with enough resistance enough resistance, let us say, from the people and by the people. And did you vote for him? Do you have voter remorse?
No. I didn't want to vote for McCain either, but I did.
Well, McCain was a phony. He was a fall guy. He was a fall guy. We know that. McCain was set up to fail. And that's because the Republicans raped the country for 8 straight years. And the way the game is played, I told you what my daddy told me when I was a little boy. He said, look, Michael, here's a great country. We love it. But the way the system works is for a number of years, one party runs, the other party calls them crooks. Then that party leaves. The people say, I had enough of them. Then the other party comes in. Then that party calls them crooks. And he said, then they get thrown out. Then the other party comes back and calls them crooks. He said, but somehow the system works. Now, that worked for a long enough time, but we've never had so many questionable people in such high places as we do today. That's the real problem today. There used to be a line that politicians would never cross, and that was the line of national security. Can you honestly say to yourself that you believe Dick Durbin of Illinois considers national security interests when he takes 100 of the world's worst terrorists from Guantanamo and brings them to these shores? I don't think so.
Right. I moved here to Indianapolis from Chicago right around the election time. And, I mean, that is Chicago. It is. You're absolutely right. It's Chicago gang work through and through.
Well, look, I could start predicting the next election. I don't want to do it because we've got to get through 2010 first and see what happens. There's no question Democrats are going to lose 10, 20, 30 seats. There's no question people hate them. They know they're a communist, socialist, anarchist party, and they know they've been hijacked by the radical left. They don't have to, you know, the American people are suddenly becoming slightly knowledgeable about what the Democrats are. The Democrats today are a socialist party, USA. The Republicans, in fact, are the Democrat Party of 20 years ago. There is no Republican Conservative Party at all. There is no Republican Conservative Party. There is a Democrat Socialist wing of the Democrat Party, which is what it is, with a few holdouts. And then there's the Liberal Republican Party, but there is no Conservative Republican Party per se. Let's leave it at that. It's too soon to start talking about next year. Michelle, I'm sending you a free copy of Banned in Britain. In fact, today, everybody who gets on the air will get one. That's all there is to it. Coming up next will be an attorney for the Bologna family of San Francisco. Now, many of you don't know who this man is or who they are. Mrs. Bologna is a woman who has suffered more so than anybody you've ever met. She lost her husband and her two fine sons one afternoon in San Francisco when an illegal alien gangbanger killed all of them. This happened because Annie Tuesom Newsom, the mayor of the city, encouraged so-called sanctuary policies for the city of San Francisco. This murderer should have been deported from the country when he was first caught by the police, but the far-left communist government of San Francisco catered to him. As a result, Mr. Bologna and his two sons were killed. We have the lawyer for Mrs. Bologna on. When the story first broke, I donated quite a bit of money to her.
Savage.
It is 33 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Savage Nation all across America. Right now we have an attorney for the Bologna family in San Francisco. You say, well, who's that? I don't remember this. I'm not interested. I'm shopping. Last summer, an illegal alien, Edwin Ramos, an MS-13 member and an illegal alien, who was allowed into the city of San Francisco as a result of the liberal immigration policies of the United States of America and the communist immigration policies of Annie Tuesome Newsom and the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco. Ramos killed Anthony, Michael, and Matthew Bologna. Innocent man and his two sons in cold blood on a Sunday afternoon. Shot them dead. The San Francisco sanctuary policy prevented the SFPD from reporting Ramos to ICE on the three occasions that SFPD had Ramos in custody. Listen to what I just said to you. Three times this gangbanger had been in custody, but three times Mayor Newsom's policies and the Board of Directors, the Board of Supervisors, prohibited the San Francisco Police Department from reporting him to ICE. And but for the sanctuary policy, the Bolognas would be alive today. Anthony Bologna's widow, Danielle Bologna, is suing the city of San Francisco that should be ashamed of itself. The trial court just held its first hearing this week, and joining us now is an attorney for the Bologna family, Chris Kobach. Mr. Kobach, thank you for being with us on the Savage Nation.
It's my pleasure.
Well, Chris, this is one of the worst tragedies I've seen in the years I've lived in the Bay Area. What is the city's response to your claim?
Well, you know, it's a very surprising response. The city is basically not denying that they were breaking federal law and breaking state law. That's one really important element of the Bologna's claim, is that, you know, not only are sanctuary policies a bad idea that endanger the public and that encourage illegal immigration, they're against federal law. Congress in 1996 passed a statute that says, I can even quote it for you, a local government entity or official may not in any way restrict any official from sending to or receiving from the INS information regarding the citizenship or status of any individual. In other words...
So what's the city's strategy? They're agreeing that they violated federal law. What, are they boasting about it?
No, they're not boasting about it, but they're not contesting that fact, and instead they're simply saying, we don't care, we're immune. You can't sue us. And their theory is that just as a state is not liable when a state releases someone on parole, they're saying, well, this is just like releasing someone on parole. If a state's not liable for that, a city's not liable for this.
So they do have a strategy.
They do have a strategy. But I tell you, it's not a rock-solid one, because there are a lot of differences. When a state exercises its decision to grant a prisoner parole, that's a lawful act. You know, that's an executive decision involving discretion, and it's authorized by law. When the city of San Francisco tells its police officers, we're not going to let you guys call ICE, we're not going to let you talk to ICE, we're not going to let you discuss any alien status with ICE, that's an illegal act by the city of San Francisco, and it's not a discretionary one authorized by law. So we think we've got a pretty important distinction.
Well, Mr. Kobach, here's a city that pays hundreds of thousands of dollars for false sex harass suit claims without blinking an eye. They pay out hundreds of thousands of dollars to people who claim someone touched them, looked at them the wrong way, and they're basically giving the middle finger to Mrs. Bologna, whose husband and two sons were killed because of their policies. This is unbelievable to me.
It really is. And the amazing thing is that they are basically acknowledging that the sanctuary city policy is problematic, more than problematic, is illegal, and yet they're still trying to defend themselves against this claim from the Bolognas. I mean, if there ever
was... Well, this first happened, I sent Mrs. Bologna my own money, and I know others did too, because I was heartbroken by it. I couldn't believe it, and the woman must be wrecked from this. To have a city not even say I'm sorry, did Mayor Newsom ever apologize to her for what happened?
I don't believe he has. I haven't heard that he has. I operate out of Kansas City, so I don't get every detail of what communication has occurred.
Well, I mean, you know, you're one of the top lawyers in the country. You have a doctorate from Oxford University. You have a bachelor's summa cum laude from Harvard. I mean, I respect true degrees from great universities. So you must know the law well enough to know that this case has merit. And so, therefore, do you think you have a chance of winning on the merits?
We do. I think regardless of what happens, right now the case is in front of the Superior Court of San Francisco County and in the court of Charlotte Woolard, who is the judge. She clearly recognizes that these are very weighty claims and issues. She said it's going to take her a few weeks to decide the matter, so she has it right now under advisement. I think regardless of who wins in Judge Woolard's case, in Judge Woolard's chambers, there will be an appeal, and I think it will be decided ultimately in the California Court of Appeal.
Where do you think it'll go? You mean the Ninth Circuit?
No, the Ninth Circuit is for the federal cases. This is a state case, so it'll just go to the Court of Appeal for the circuit that covers San Francisco, and I think it will probably end there. And
where is Ramos today? Where is the killer today?
He's behind bars because the city is, or rather the county, is prosecuting him for murder. And so he is presumably going to serve time.
Wait, I missed that. The city is not prosecuting Ramos for murder?
Is the county. I should say the county is. But the he will hopefully serve a long, long time in prison the rest of his life. Now, as you may have heard, the county attorney elected not to seek the death penalty, which I think was a mistake. You know, what case more deserves the death penalty than gunning down three people in cold blood who have done nothing to you?
Hadn't he been arrested three times before by the SFPD but released because of Newsom and the Board of Supervisors and their sanctuary policy?
Yeah, he was. And, you know, his prior arrests were not for, not for jaywalking. They were for serious things. And in one occasion, he had beat up a kid on a municipal bus because this young man was not a member of the MS-13 gang. That's one of the things that Ramos's gang does. They attack usually Hispanics who are not gang members in order to coerce membership in MS-13. Another occasion, he attacked a woman, mugged a woman who happened to be pregnant. On a third occasion, he was arrested in connection with possessing a weapon that was associated with another crime.
And so, the city has not apologized to Mrs. Bologna for these murders?
Not that I'm aware of.
The mayor has not sent a letter saying, I'm sorry for what happened to you, even? Not even he doesn't have to say he caused it. He could say, I'm sorry it happened. He's never even expressed sympathy, Newsom?
You know, it's amazing to me that the city isn't saying, you know what, we screwed up, and the sanctuary policy is a disaster that's endangering San Franciscans. Now, I will say this, Newsom has publicly come out and said the sanctuary policy was never meant to, you know, result in things like this. I'm sure that's what they thought.
That's awfully nice of Gavin Newsom. At least he's, I guess he has a scintilla of rationality left somewhere in his cerebrum. But that's not going to help Mrs. Bologna. How is she faring?
Well, I suppose as well as one can, given that her husband is gone, and she had four children. Her two eldest sons were gone, and as you may know, there was a third son. There is a third son. He was in the car when Ramos shot and killed.
You're kidding me. Another child watched this happen?
Yeah, saw his father and his two brothers gunned down in the car, and he survived, thank God. But, you know, can you imagine that, the trauma?
I can't believe it. How old a boy is he?
I think he's 18 now. He would have been.
I don't know how this child can walk around without, you talk about flashbacks, you talk about fear. I don't know how he lives. What kind of money is this going to cost, Mrs. Ramos? Pardon me, Mrs. Bologna.
Well, the suing the city doesn't cost her anything. We're just operating on contingency, hoping that at the end of the day we'll win and that the city will be forced to pay. I mean, you think about this. Mr. Bologna was the primary breadwinner of the family. She's lost two sons. But, you know, there's another side to this lawsuit, too, and it's the one that really drives me personally. I want to see the city of San Francisco pay for this. Not because the money is an end in itself, but because I want to send a signal to every other sanctuary city in America, and as you know, there are more than 70 of them, that you cannot do this to American citizens. You cannot put your citizens at danger without any consequences.
And that's, yes, that's easy. I agree with you. As I said, when this happened, I ran a little fundraising campaign for Mrs. Bologna. I sent her, I believe, $5,000 at the time. I know my listeners did as well. Does she have any kind of defense fund that you can mention?
She does not have a defense fund because she's, you know, currently not doesn't need to defend herself. She hasn't been sued, so this and suing the city isn't costing her anything. But I know.
Is there any way to donate to her? Who's supporting the woman right now?
Well, you know, there were generous people like yourself. You know, gave her money at the beginning. There was also an insurance policy that she had that helped sustain her. But, you know, she's now a single mother with two kids. And
I'll tell you what, if in the future you have a place for people to make some donations around Christmas time, let me know. I mean, I'll run it on the air and I'll send more, because I don't know how a woman could take that loss and get up every day. She must have some tremendous religious faith to keep her going.
Yeah, I just can't even imagine. You know, as long as I've been thinking about this case, just what it would be like to lose more than
so him. The killer, Ramos, Edwin Ramos, the MS-13 member who killed Anthony Michael and Matthew Bologna in cold blood, why did he do it? Was there a reason?
Well, this is his story. He claims that, well, let's back up. The killing happened when, as you mentioned in describing the situation, The Bolognas were coming home on a Sunday afternoon. They had a picnic after church with some relatives. They were coming into San Francisco. It was a narrow street, and apparently the two cars were coming head-on. Ramos was coming toward them. Mr. Bologna pulled over, and you know, so that to allow Mr. Ramos, you know, being a polite gentleman, he allowed Mr. Ramos's car to drive by, and then for some reason Ramos, you know, sprayed the Bologna's car with bullets. Ramos claims that he had an accomplice, or that he was in the car with somebody else, and that the other person shot the Bologna.
Yeah, right. Got the wrong man. I've heard that defense before.
Yeah, that's his claim. I don't know. It's just I don't know how one can even begin to explain such a horrible.
Well, why did he kill them? What was he saying? He thought they were members of a gang?
Yeah, he thought they were. He claims his shooter, who was in the car with him, thought they were members of a rival gang.
I see. So it was self-defense on top of it all.
I guess so.
What a world we live in. I can't imagine this is going on, because I'll tell you, 20, 30 years ago, this wouldn't even be a case. This guy would have been electrocuted in Sing Sing within 30, 60, 90 days. He would have had one appeal and he would have been electrocuted already. It's unbelievable to me. I don't know what kind of country we're living in anymore.
Well, 30 years ago, you wouldn't have had a city defying federal law and saying, we don't care what federal law is. We're going to make our own law here in the People's Republic of San Francisco. You know, the other thing I didn't mention, there's a state law that they're violating, too. Back in 1951, California passed a state law that says anytime you arrest an alien who is associated with drug trafficking, you have to report that person to federal immigration authorities. So they were breaking that law, too. MS-13 is a well-known drug trafficking gang as well. And it's just amazing.
Well, you're dealing with some very dangerous people, counselor. Do you have any threats as a result? I mean, you're going after a member of a notoriously murderous gang. Are they threatened? Have they threatened you?
They have not threatened me personally. Not yet.
Well, all I can say is thank God for that. We're speaking with Chris Kobach, who is the attorney for the Bologna family. Many of you don't even know the story. That shows you the sad state of news, not only in San Francisco, but in America. You know about Tiger Woods, and you know about such trivia as that. But you don't know about a father and two sons gunned down in cold blood by an illegal alien gang member who had been arrested three times before by the brave members of the San Francisco Police Department, but who was released because of Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, and the Board of Supervisors' sanctuary policy. That's the story. That's the country. Counselor Kobach, I wish you the best of luck. I hope you give us an update as it emerges right here on the Savage Nation.
I will let you know what the decision is as soon as we get it.
Good luck to you and Merry Christmas to you. The time is 47 minutes after the hour. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, we just heard what happened to one family in San Francisco as the result of an illegal alien, and that is their murder. Certainly not all illegal aliens come here to murder, but it's troubling that one out of three prisoners are illegal aliens. That's a fact that you won't hear about from the government media complex, but 33% of all prisoners are illegal aliens who came here not to work but to commit murder, to do other terrible, terrible things to legal citizens. So what you're about to hear should make you very, very unhappy, but I'm going to give it to you because others won't. The Democrats in the House of Representatives are trying to grant legal status to illegal aliens in a new immigration bill. Hispanic, Black, Asian, and other House lawmakers backing immigration overhaul called Tuesday to legalize illegal immigrants in the United States despite a weakened economy and joblessness. Representative Lydia Velazquez, Democrat of New York, chairwoman of the so-called Congressional Hispanic Caucus, which I find, by the way, morally outrageous that there could be a Congressional Black Caucus or a Congressional Hispanic Caucus. I've never heard of a Congressional Caucasian Caucus, have you? Or a Congressional White Caucus. Can you imagine the ruckus that would cause? Oh, yeah, Joe Blow is the head of the Congressional Caucasian Caucus. Why would there be a need for a Congressional Black Caucus when we have a black president? Why do you need a Congressional Hispanic Caucus unless you believe in the balkanization of America? Anyway, this woman, Lydia Velasquez, says, for those who say that given the state of our economy, given the unemployment rate, this is not the time, I would say to you there is no wrong or right time, she said. There is a moral obligation. You know, Representative Gutierrez, I would suggest you say that to Mrs. Bologna, that there's a moral obligation to grant amnesty to illegal aliens. And Ms. Gutierrez, I would say that you say to the 8 million people who are not working at jobs being held by illegal immigrants that it's a moral obligation to make certain that the illegal immigrants go to the head of the line. Fact of the matter is that illegal immigrants currently hold 8 million jobs that are stolen from citizens and legal immigrants who could be holding those jobs. Lamar Smith, the Texas representative, a good man, top Republican on the House Judiciary Committee, said, we could cut the unemployment rate in half simply by enforcing immigration laws. Well, that doesn't mean anything to Gutierrez and to Velasquez. Gutierrez seeks to legalize illegal aliens by requiring them to do the following. Pay a $500 fine for each adult. Can you believe this? A $500 fine for being an illegal immigrant. How much do you think their health care has cost you? How much do you think other care has cost you? $500? They would also have to learn English. That's a joke. They'd have to pass background checks. That's another joke. Obama never passed the background check. And they'd have to meet other requirements. We don't know what those are. They'd then be eligible for a six-year visa. And when that was done, a green card. Well, my friends, that's the next big battle after cap and trade. The Democrats will try to pay off the Hispanic constituency in this nation, and they will do it by breaking all of our laws and breaking America in half. That's my opinion. It's one man's opinion, and I'm not alone on this. If I were alone on this, I wouldn't be saying it. I believe that granting amnesty to illegal aliens will create the greatest social unrest in American history. That's my opinion. 1-800-449-8255. And to show you, well, there's so much going on out here that the best thing to do is take a quick caller out of New York in this case. Glenn, thanks for listening to the Savage Nation on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good evening. First and foremost, I'd like to wish my condolences to the Bologna family and their tragic, tragic loss.
Terrible.
Terrible is right. My question is, if there's federal and state laws that prohibit illegal aliens being in the United States, why hasn't some prosecutor in the state of California prosecuted one of these supervisors for aiding?
Well, let's answer the question another way. How do you think so many radical leftist Democrats got elected to begin with? How do you explain the fact that most of our senators in the big cities don't represent their constituents but represent illegal aliens and their issues? The answer is because they were put in power by the powerful vote of illegal aliens who never should have been allowed to vote in the first place. In San Francisco, the ballot is in something like six languages. Let me tell you something. The country has been stolen right out from under our feet, which is why we have illegitimi running everything. And remember what the ancient Romans said. Illegitimi non caberundum. Illegitimi non caberundum. Non caberundum illegitimi. Any way you spin it, it means the same thing. I'm not going to translate the Latin because it's a family show.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here are the stories that made it to michaelsavage.com. U.S. Muslims are training in camps on how to slit throats? Well, a chilling new video released by the Christian Action Network actually shows Muslim women at a compound in New York State practicing throat-slitting techniques and assault weapons attacks. Now, if you think this is right-wing hysteria, why don't you go to michaelsavage.com and take a look at the video yourself? Maybe you'll wake up one day. U.S. gave up billions in tax money for Citigroup's bailout repayment. That's the top right of michaelsavage.com. Liberals are angry at Obama. They want to know why he didn't push more of a Marxist agenda than he's already done so. Oh, my. The party's progressives. That's a code word, by the way. Progressive is code word for communist. Remember the Black Panthers? Remember them coming to polling booths in Philadelphia with clubs and truncheons? Yeah. Violation of voting rights. Not in Nicaragua, but in Philadelphia. Well, Obama's Justice Department refuses to cooperate in a probe of this thuggery. Are you surprised? I doubt it. 100 Reasons Why Climate Change is Natural. That's on Michael Savage. Iran says Israel is within reach. They test-fired an upgraded version of its most advanced missile, which is capable of hitting Israel and parts of Europe. Well, I'm sick and tired of hearing about it. Israel starts to sound like the boy who cried wolf. What are they telling me about it? They have the military. Why don't they use it? And Mr. Putin from Russia has a new son. Well, he's not married to the woman, but she's beautiful. She's a gymnast. And she's given, well, we shall say him a son. And by the way, the child is half Muslim. A source says Obama has written a letter to the North Korean fanatic Kim Jong-il. You hear this? Again, bending over backwards to another nut. Remember the Lockerbie bomber released by Gordon Brown, the man who put me on the banned in England list? Well, he's now at home in Tripoli, and they won't say what his health condition is. Here's a big one from Florida. The governor, Charlie Crist, who's really a rhino, Republican in name only, is now in a dead heat poll with a upcomer named Rubio, a Cuban-American, for the Republican primary. Now, since Rubio has pulled even with Crist thus far, this early on in the Florida Senate race, it seems to me that Charlie Crist's campaign for the U.S. Senate is currently in very deep trouble. What about transferring the Gitmo terrorists to Illinois? You think they're going to be secure there? Well, on my website, there's an article, Terrorists Beat System in Federal Prisons. And by the way, remember Major Hassan, the Muslim who conducted the Fort Hood massacre? Well, FBI agents who discovered Hassan's extremist ties before the Fort Hood massacre may not have had access to key Army records on the psychiatrist. You hear this? His personnel records were kept from the FBI, and you wonder why we're sitting ducks. Sitting ducks. Congressman John Culberson of Texas has written to Hillary Clinton on my behalf. I urge you to use all diplomatic tools at your disposal to press the UK to remove Michael Savage from the list. You know, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this program and you like Michael Savage, can I ask you to please write your congressman and ask them to join Congressman Culberson in pressing for my release from this list of murderers and terrorists? How about Chuck Schumer, the good liberal? Well, he refused to turn off his cell phone on a U.S. Airways shuttle flight from New York to Washington, and then he called a flight attendant the B-word. Oh, yes. He loves women and minorities. I could just imagine what he says about them when no one's listening. On the bottom of michaelsavage.com, and you shouldn't miss this one, Al Gore caught in a big white lie. What does that mean? Well, he said that the polar ice caps would melt in 4 years. Now he says he was mistaken. Ha, ha, ha. And Savage is honored by a profile in The New Yorker, the only current media figure so given this honor. And I really want you to look at this article. What Savage gives those listeners is one of the most addictive programs on radio and one of the least predictable, says The New Yorker. All of this and more on michaelsavage.com, where, by the way, you can still order a copy of Banned in Britain for Christmas. We've escalated the shipping schedule. If you order now, you can still get Banned in Britain for Christmas, only on michaelsavage.com. Let's move on. Here's Bill Ayers, communist, friend of Obama, talking about Obama on Russian TV.
If he asked me for advice today, of course, I'd tell him to get out of Iraq and get out of Afghanistan, just for starters. I mean, one of the things that's misunderstood, I think, about President Obama is he said all during the campaign, I'm a moderate, pragmatic, compromising politician. And people on the right refuse to believe that to this day.
A moderate? Did you hear that? But wait, it gets worse.
For this country, with its incredible legacy of racism and slavery and apartheid, for this country to elect a black man to the highest office in the land took some doing and was an historic moment and a real blow to white supremacy. Not a fatal blow, but a blow nonetheless, and one worth celebrating.
This is Obama's political godfather. As left as you can go, like Stalin without the mustache, he would kill 30 million Americans, in my estimation, if he had the power. MichaelSavage.com. It's one man's opinion. Don't take it too seriously. It's only the truth. I'll be right back.
Savage.
For years, I've been talking about the phony conservatives in our political system. They keep throwing up fake candidates after fake candidates, and they expect us to vote for them. Well, joining us now is a former speechwriter for President Bush, whose book, Speechless, shines a light into what really went on behind the scenes at the White House. Matt Latimer, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Well, why did you want to suddenly write this book?
Well, you know, Michael, I came to Washington as a Reagan conservative, somebody who believed in the principles that you talk about a lot of, you know, limited government, lower taxes, strong defense, and I wanted to go to Washington to kind of make those things a reality. Then I went to Washington. I worked on Capitol Hill for many Republican senators who called themselves conservatives, and some of them were, and at the Pentagon, and then at the White House. And what I saw over that time was basically what I believed in, the conservative principles that I thought I was going to advance in Washington, were not really shared by a lot of Republican leaders. And we have running the Republican Party right now a lot of people who basically might as well be Democrats. They do not believe, and they did not advance the causes of limited government, less spending, fiscal discipline. They want to be Democrats light. And that's the same mentality that's still going on in Washington, D.C. right now.
Why do you think that is?
I thought a lot of them ran for office or got into positions of power because they wanted to be something. They didn't want to do something. A lot of conservatives go to Washington. They don't trust Washington. They don't trust the federal government. They only go there for a limited amount of time to get some things done, and then they come back home. But a lot of these professional politicians, they like power. They like privileges. They like getting reelected, and they're all buddies with everybody. There's a buddy system in Washington. Democrats and Republicans share it. And they protect each other. And their goal is re-election and holding on to power. And they may exchange elections with one side or the other from time to time. But basically, they just want to stay in their offices.
Well, how different was Washington than what you actually thought it would be?
Well, a couple of things. On Capitol Hill, for example, I saw a lot of senators, and particularly, I mean, Republicans are held to a higher standard by the media. We all know that, as opposed to Democrats. But we had a lot of Republicans I worked for who, you know, they were not conservatives. I mean, people said Republicans were in control of Congress. Why didn't we enact more conservative legislation? Well, it's because most of the Republicans who are in power in the Senate and in the House are not conservatives. They're the rhinos or the quote-unquote mavericks like John McCain or Olympia Snowe or Susan Collins or Lindsey Graham. And they're the kind of people who have learned that the way to get attention and to get praise from the media is to run against conservatives and run against the Republican Party. So I saw a lot of that going on while a very small band of actual conservatives fought against them. Then at the White House, we had spending, you know, like as someone said, like a drunken sailor. We had a lack of all fiscal discipline. We had an expansion of the federal government. When I was at the White House, there actually was a proposal the president was going to announce in favor of a cap-and-trade policy on global warming. And the only reason that cap-and-trade was not announced by the Bush administration as official Republican policy was that conservatives caught wind of it at the last minute and got them to take those words out. But he still gave the same speech and still endorsed a more moderate version of on climate change without just using the words cap-and-trade in it. We changed our position on in favor of a timeline for withdrawal from Iraq. We started to have a deal with North Korea that would have, you know, made the Clintons blush. That was because of Condi Rice. And I saw a lot of instances where lower taxes, smaller government, getting out of people's lives and maintaining a vigorous national defense were compromised.
Well, it's like Obama not saying win or victory in Afghanistan.
Right. I thought that was very telling, Michael, that you know, President Obama gave a speech like a sort of like a befuddled professor, and he wanted to explain everything very logically, and it sounded all you know, very academic. But a military leader, a commander in chief, the first thing you have to say to the troops is, if we're going to go into this effort, we're going to win it. We need to have victory. That's what we need to look for. And President Obama, who has no experience, of course, leading a military, failed to say that.
How can we gain back the conservative philosophy that's been lost?
Well, I think we need to have people on the outside like you and like others, like the Tea Party movement, people who believe in principles, to get out there and to fight against the Republican establishment. I'm perfectly willing to say it is time to throw them all out, even the few good ones, because it's time for a radical change of the Republican Party. How are we going to enact conservative policies when the people who we entrust to carry them out are not conservatives? It's just not going to happen. And that's why these primary challenges of the Republican, you know, establishment candidates is a very good thing to do. And it may be to the point, and I'm not endorsing this, but it may be to the point where we start thinking about an alternative party against the Democrats, because the Republicans clearly aren't doing the job. I mean, look at the record. In the last 8 years, we left office. They gave President Bush a 22% approval rating. We lost the House. We lost the Senate. We had President Obama, Speaker Pelosi, and Harry Reid running Washington. We have the people identifying themselves as Republicans at an all-time low. And there was a poll out recently that said that if the Tea Party was actually a political party, more people would vote for them than vote for the Republicans.
Well, do you see that happening now?
Yeah, I do think there is an effort underway right now that is the beginnings of a revolution. And we need a conservative Che Guevara, if you will, to lead it. But you see that in the town hall meetings that we've had over the summer. We see that in the Tea Party movement. We see that in the challenge in New York State against the hand-picked party candidate, Didi Scozafava, who dropped out of the race and then endorsed the Democrat. We see that in Florida in a Republican challenge against the establishment candidate, Charlie Crist, for the U.S. Senate, a man who is destined to disappoint conservatives if he gets elected. And we see that in Texas, when we try to back and support the conservative governor, Rick Perry, who's now being challenged by the more moderate Kay Bailey Hutchison, trying to unseat a conservative because Republican elites just don't like him for some reason. There is a stirring out there, and I think a lot of people are very dissatisfied with the leadership of the Republican Party in Washington and want a drastic change.
How much blame is there on the media?
The media is not going to do the conservative movement any favors. They never have. And the media does, you know, distort and misunderstand some of the things that Republicans try to do. But that's always happened. I mean, that happened during the Reagan years, and yet Ronald Reagan got elected 2 terms as president and remained a conservative for the most part. You can defeat the media if you are not afraid to challenge them and to call them out. But we have a Republican mentality that's friends with the media. A lot of the people who are running the Republican Party now in Washington are buddies with all these people, all the reporters, all the journalists, all the Democrats who are the Democratic strategists. They're all friends. They get together at cocktail parties. They pat each other on the back for jobs well done. We can't challenge the media and correct the media if we're buddies with them. If we have a buddy system mentality that encourages us not to challenge them. So I think a lot of the fault to what goes on, I mean, the media has its share of the blame, to be sure, but a lot of the fault is ours, because as Republicans, we have failed to articulate principles we believe in, and we've gotten into this mentality that what's called, quote-unquote, big government conservatism. I mean, Karl Rove's book, I just found out, somebody had read the first chapter of it, or one of the chapters, talks about a defense of big government conservatism, supposedly. Well, there's no such thing as big government conservatism. And that was the problem with what happened to the Bush administration, is they started to believe that the way to get support from the media and the way to get support from the country was to pretend to be a modified version of Democrats by spending money, by having new programs, by putting more power in Washington, and that's just exactly wrong.
Are Obama's policies making it easier for someone to run against them? I would hope so.
Well, I think the Obama administration is an unquestioned disaster. I mean, Barack Obama was more liberal than anybody expected him to be. I mean, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people who voted for him expected him to be. He's getting very unpopular. The Democratic Party is showing that they're actually the party of big government and more social programs and a disastrous health care plan. But, you know, Republicans can get back into power by not being Obama and not being the Democrats. But what if you get back into power and you're the same old people who are the same old crowd believing in big government and not really changing anything and not really shaking up the system? We're going to be voted all over again. So running against Obama, while popular and while maybe helpful in the short term, in the long term is not a recipe for a long-term conservative resurgence.
Well, I don't know about a third-party movement. You think it's more viable today?
Well, Michael, what is actually happening is I know you've touched on this yourself. What is actually happening right now in the country is, I think, the beginnings of a third-party movement in everything but name. What's happening right now is a lot of conservative activists are fed up. They're tired of the Republican people running Washington, and they are taking matters into their own hands and starting their own movement, which in effect is going to throw these people out of power. I do think a third-party movement is viable, but what actually is going to happen is the Republican Party is going to end up being the third party because the conservative movement is much larger than the Republicans and elites, and they're going to overpower these people and drive them out. And eventually you're going to have a conservative party, I hope, that is led by movement conservatives, grassroots conservatives, against Republican leadership that has failed us.
Matt Latimer, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on. Thanks for all you're doing, and thank you to all your listeners out there.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Look, I've talked about how the Obama administration has been backing the ousted president of Honduras, who is a communist, who was removed from office legally by his own government, by his Supreme Court. It's a terribly infuriating but very telling story. Here is Ray Walser from the Heritage Foundation. Ray, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be on your show again today.
To remind my listeners what is actually going on in Honduras, and why Obama and Hillary are backing a communist.
In Honduras, you have basically there are three dates to keep in mind. There's June 28th of this year, there is November 29th, and there is January 27th of next year. Now, on June 28th, a process began rather abruptly in which the president of Honduras, Mel Zelaya, was removed from office. He had, in the weeks preceding this, attempted to launch what the institutions considered to be an illegal referendum. That referendum ultimately would lead to discussions about his continuance in office. The Honduran Constitution specifically prohibits any efforts to change the Constitution to hold more than one term in office. So basically what you had was a sort of a constitutional train wreck. Mr. Zelaya charged ahead with an illegal referendum. The Supreme Court, the Electoral Tribunal, the Congress, the High Command of the military all basically said, you're off track. You're basically in total violation of our rules, our constitutional order. And they removed him from the country. Now, they did it rather abruptly. They went into his house early in the morning, and it was a little bit, the military was involved, and they put him on an airplane and dropped him off in San Jose, Costa Rica. No one was clearly, as they would say in Spanish, it was quite a susto or a surprise. This was judged by many of us, including myself, as maybe perhaps a little awkward, but this was a constitutional process of removing the president. The various organs of government were consulted, the checks and balances worked. Mr. Zelaya was removed from office. Others, including the U.S. State Department, called it a coup. Many of it went on to say it was a military coup. Okay, so you have this situation has developed. An interim government comes in, says we're simply the caretakers. We're going to keep this country running. We're going to keep law and order in the streets. We're going to move on. We're going to follow the electoral schedule. So we are going to be here as caretakers until that next date, November 29th, which is the elections. Now, the elections, the candidates in the elections were chosen well before, almost a very long period of time, chosen in November of 2008. There are candidates from two major parties that run Honduras, the National and the Liberal Party, and a few minor party candidates. So the election process was running in a separate track from the track that the removal of Zelaya, the interim government, was going on. So come to November 29th, general elections are called. There is, on the part of Mr. Zelaya, who in the interim has come back into the country, who is living in a, sort of in asylum in the Brazilian embassy, but interacting with the people, has press access and so forth and so on. Mr. Zelaya calls for a boycott of the elections. Mr. Zelaya says, I'm not going to honor an agreement I signed back in October the 30th supporting the elections. I've not been restored to power. So there's a great division here. Again, sort of a right-left divide. On the 29th, and I was an observer down there, the elections take place. They take place in a largely orderly fashion. Turnout is higher than average in Honduras. The electorate chooses, oddly enough, the guy from the National Party, the opposite party that Zelaya came from, the Liberal Party. He gets about a 15 to 20 point mandate. He's ready to move forward as the elected constitutional president and take office as indicated on January 27th. So that's kind of what the debate is at this point. Was this a free and fair election, or was this an effort on the part of the interim government basically to rubber stamp their removal of Mr. Zelaya? And that's where kind of the left and the right in this country, in the international arena, tend to divide.
How did our State Department react?
Let's look at June 28th, on the day that Mr. Zelaya was removed. This was, as I said, the images were splashed across the country, the military in front of his house, soldiers at arms. This brought back all sorts of memories of military coups in the 1960s and the 1970s. Quickly, the inter-American community, represented by the organization American Stakes, gets together and says, look, we have a coup here. We're going to have to punish Honduras. The United States State Department basically says, well, if the other nations of the Americas say it was a military coup or it was a coup, then we're going to have to go along with them. Nobody bothered to look at sort of what had happened, what was the reasons behind this removal, the constitutional process that was taking place. Nobody bothered to say, let's examine Mr. Zelaya's record prior to June 28th. It was as if history began on the 28th. The illegal firing of the senior officer of the Honduran military, who's restored by the court, and Zelaya basically says, I don't believe in the court. It doesn't dispense justice. The election, or this referendum he was going to hold, scheduled for Sunday, the June 28th, he says, I'm going to hold it anyway. The materials had been impounded, so he leads a mob onto an Air Force base. I mean, he was basically creating a sort of a state of disorder in his own country. So anyway, State Department, first of all, joins the consensus with the likes of Hugo Chavez, Daniel Ortega, even Raul Castro, that great Democrat on that little island in the Caribbean, comes and says, I'm outraged. You know, the political rights of Hondurans have been violated by this removal of Zelaya. Those are great words from Raul Castro. Anyway, the State Department is sort of going along, chugging along with this process. So they basically give an order, restore Mr. Zelaya or else we'll kick you out of the OAS. U.S. goes along with it. So they kick Honduras out.
Then what?
That's it. They've sort of blustered on. They've demanded that Mr. Zelaya return, but the people in Honduras are sort of holding tight to their constitutional interpretations. The United States, after Zelaya tries to sneak back in on an airplane provided by Hugo Chavez, sort of says maybe this is not exactly the best way to go. So they set up a mediation process. They even bring in Oscar Arias, the Nobel Peace Prize winner from Costa Rica. They bring him in. A mediation process begins, but it doesn't go very far. In early September, the Department of State continues to apply pressure. They make a legal ruling. It's a coup. They cut off some assistance, not all of it. They revoke visas. They basically isolate the interim government in Honduras. Well, that's still not working. So in late October, they send a fairly high-level mission down. That mission finally brings an agreement between the two parties, between the people of Zelaya and the interim government, recognize the elections, remove the isolation, have a truth and verification commission that looks into what happened, form a government of national unity, and invite Congress to vote on whether or not Mr. Zelaya should be restored. Okay, looks good. Then there are more missteps. To ultimately come around, the State Department has gradually evolved, realizing that Honduras is a friend, that it had a reasonable case, that Mr. Zelaya is not a great Democrat, and that you don't want to tear this country apart just to prove a principle.
Exactly.
So basically, the State Department has begun to move towards acceptance of the elections. It is still asking that there be a government of national unity. It appears from what I saw yesterday in the press releases that it would accept the vote of the Congress to not restore Mr. Zelaya as part of that agreement. So we're hoping that the State Department is getting a lot of pressure from the Brazils and the Venezuelas and everything like that. We're hoping that the government will actually recognize Mr. Pepe Lobo, who will be sworn in on January 27th, as the constitutional leader and basically put this chapter of this interregnum period behind. There's still a lot of work to be done, national reconciliation. We have to figure out what to do with Mr. Zelaya. And there are lots of underlying problems, from poverty to crime in Honduras, that need to be addressed in a broader national dialogue. But simply dividing up sort of right and left and refusing to recognize the elections is not going to solve that problem.
Well, does it look as though we're going to go along with what the voters of Honduras want?
Well, the Honduran people have spoken. They want Mr. Pepe Lobo. He was going to win. He's won the elections. He has a clear mandate to try to bring this to closure. Now he must deal with two sorts of sides. He must deal with the internal side, and Zelaya has backers. I'm not going to say it's a poor country. People have sort of listened to him. People are concerned. I mean, if you're out of work, if you're hungry, it's a country. It's the third poorest country in the hemisphere. There are lots of problems that Mr. Lobo is going to have to try to tackle, but we can't cut off economic assistance to them. We can't punish them. We're basically that punishment will be transferred to the very people we're trying to help. So I'm hoping that the people of Honduras will work with their new leadership, will work towards the couple of steps that are out there, look back at the past, investigate it, create a transition process with a government that reaches across the political spectrum, not just to the National Party, but to the Liberal Party and to those people who followed Zelaya. Try to bring them back into the sort of more or less the political dialogue. And I think with that, you're going to have a reasonably good chance. There's going to be a lot of the other countries in the hemisphere want to say, well, look, you know, we're not going to recognize these guys. The Hondurans really care about what we say. They care about what their neighbors say. They're not really all that concerned about what Brazil or Venezuela or Argentina say about their process. And they're rather proud of their elections. And I think they want to move on.
Ray Walser, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me. I hope I can come back and talk with you again in the near future.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
CNN, the Crescent News Network, is actually pushing Sharia or Arab Muslim banking in the United States of America. Listen.
Allahu Akbar.
For Babur Saeed and his family, Islam is Allah a way of life. Akbar. They pray, eat, and attend school according to their faith. It even extends to their finances. Saeed uses Islamic models of financial products to pay for and insure his home, invest in stocks, and save money. Why these special financial products? Because faithful Muslims can't invest in companies that violate Islamic law, and they aren't allowed to charge or pay interest.
Now hear what Barbara has to say.
When you have $100, just a very simple calculation, and you give it to me, Islamically I have to return that money with the word of thank to you exactly as I borrow it. No less, no more.
Saeed's local imam says how one deals with finances is a major tenet of Islam. But it's not easy for American Muslims to comply with their faith when it comes to money. Muslims make up an estimated 1% of the U.S. population. There are few banks serving their needs.
You see, we're not meeting the needs of Muslims.
While there are few options available, some financial experts speculate the Islamic banking model could have kept the U.S. out of recession. Wissam Berjawi is a manager with University Islamic Financial, one of the few companies offering Islamic mortgages in the U.S.
We never dealt with these risky type of qualifications of clients in terms of negative amortization, 110% loan, interest only. These are not part of Islamic finance models. So if these were eliminated, then you would not have had these huge amount of foreclosures as well as these overinflated house prices.
You see, if we just had Sharia banking and Sharia law and there were burqas in America, the economy would be fine and women would be happy.
I'm sure that if those products are out there, a lot of American Muslims, and not just American Muslims, probably a lot of people of other religious faith who value socially responsible or ethical investing or financing, they will probably come to these products.
And on the economic front, guess who Time made Man of the Year? I'm really shocked.
The winner is Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, the most powerful, least understood government force shaping our lives. It's basically about he is influencing how the economy operates.
Can you believe this? I used to say whoever has more hair wins. By that analogy, any woman could beat any man. Remember I said that to you 10 years ago? In any election, it's whoever has more hair wins. And it was pretty true going back. You know, historically, it was pretty true. That's why the in England, the Whigs wear wigs, because they knew that when they were bald, they wouldn't sell. But to bring back, there are very few bald presidents when you think about it. It's about hair. It's all show business. Whoever has more hair wins, which means if it's Palin versus Obama, she wins. See, I don't know if it applies to gender jumping. I'm not so sure about that. Usually in men, whoever has more hair wins. So that would exclude any old guy like this, you know. Who's somewhat baldy on the Republican side who thinks he could be president, who's fooling himself? He's finished. He's got the Mark of Cain, and he's finished. The Mark of McCain is over. I thought by now him and Cindy would be running a Buick dealership in Mongolia. Actually, wouldn't be such a bad idea. The Buick's selling well in China. He would have been better off taking a dealership in China, frankly, in Mongolia. If he had only listened to me and dropped out a year ago, McCain, and opened a couple of Buick dealerships in Tibet, he'd be flying high right now. Because look at how much money he could have made. They're buying Buicks like crazy over there. It's the number one selling car in China for American-made cars. It's funny how things are. It's like the 50s over there. Sometimes I think if I ever go there, I'm going to see all of my deceased relatives in China. They're going to be driving Buick LeSabres or... You know, if they're rich, they're the top of the line. They all judge each other the way we used to do in the 50s here. Do you remember how distinct, how everybody on the block would look at the car your father had by, like, the year, the model? Does that still go on? I wonder. It has to go on. They make believe it doesn't. No, now they try to, like, democratize everyone in L.A. Oh, you know, we all drive a Prius. So how do they show off? That's what I want to know. If they don't show off by Buick, like the line of Buicks, or like Cadillac or Olds, if you had, like, an Olds 88, then a 98. And the top of the line, you were like as close to Rockefeller as you could get, because Rockefeller drove a Cadillac in their mind. If you came around with a Cadillac in the neighborhood I grew up in when I was a kid, you were probably related to Nelson Rockefeller, especially if you had air conditioning ducts in the back package shelf. Remember in those days when they came around? People used to even put fake ducts in their car to show that air conditioning. You won't believe how symbolic cars used to be. But are they as symbolic? And if not so, let's say people only drive for utility today. So what's the reverse snobism now? They all drive a Prius in Beverly Hills, right? And that's not all true, but they make believe that they're down, you know. So what do they show off with? I don't know. I don't know what it is. Like, who's more liberal? Who is attached to more liberal causes? Who gave more money to a liberal cause? Most of them don't have any money. I mean, you look at guys like Larry David, you know they're cheap. You know they don't give a dime away. Between the guy who played Barat, what's his name? I forget his name. The guy from England. I saw that movie where he just did it. I saw it on TV. It was one of the most nauseatingly sick movies I've ever seen in my life. Sacha Baron Cohen did Barat. What's the name of it where he plays Bruno, terrible movie. Disgusting. The man is mentally ill. I mean, I thought Howard Stern was sick. I thought Howard Stern should have been in Creedmoor in youth. But, of course, they came along with medication around his teen years, which permitted him to go into radio and become a pornographer. And so he did very well because pornography sells. I understand that. But, you know, Howard Stern is like a sane, normal person compared to Sacha Baron Cohen. Sacha Baron Cohen is functionally insane. The movie I saw, I forget the name of it. What's it called again? Where he plays the Bruno. It's disgustingly boring, number one, predictable in every scene. And then it gets more and more and more insultingly demented, where he seeks laughter from things where there's no laughter. The man should be committed to a mental hospital for the rest of his natural life. Between Sacha Baron Cohen and Larry David and a few people in the media, it's enough to make you understand where Al-Qaeda is coming from, because they don't want this in their country. I hope you understand what I just said to you. They don't want this salacious filth, the sewer pipe of the most demented minds of our generation. They don't want it piped into their daughter's bedroom. They don't want their son watching this garbage. Do you understand this? Do you understand that there are mentally ill people who have gotten very far and very rich in the media, who have polluted the American mind and are now trying to pollute the world's mind, and there are people willing to die to keep that pollution out of their houses? Do you understand where I'm coming from? No. Okay.
Savage.